It's always interesting for me to talk to people about music like this because, you know, you listen to it so many times, but it's like to sort of break it down and realize sort of that's a bit of a formula that they've kind of developed over time. They do it quite well. Yeah, it's good stuff. I love it.
Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. We talk about our favorite records. Talking Records Podcast. We're so glad you tuned in. Thank you all for listening. You showed up to the right place. Jed and his friends dive deep and analyze the records we have grown to love. We'll tell you how we found the band, then give you a track-by-track breakdown of all the songs. So grab your favorite beverage and pull up a seat. Today we'll look at another record in its entirety.
Hello, hello. Thanks for smacking the play button. My name is Jed, and you're listening to Talking Records, a podcast where we focus on one album and gather as much information as possible on it. This is the place to learn about the stories and events that led up to some of our favorites. We discuss the songs, take a look at the art, talk about how we found the album. It's all good stuff. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Elena. How's it going, Elena?
It's going. It's super pumped to be here, man. I love your show.
Thank you. Welcome to the podcast. Today, you and I are going to be talking about the Alkaline Trio's 2000 album, Maybe I'll Catch Fire.
It's like a lifetime ago. It's crazy.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to take a moment to encourage you to follow the Talking Records podcast on Instagram and Twitter. We post frequently and would love for you to join the chatter on favorite records and songs. We also have a website, talkingrecordspodcast.com. If you're enjoying the show, please consider supporting us by purchasing a t-shirt from our website. It's a win-win situation for everyone. You get a fancy new Talking Records t-shirt, and we get a little help updating our gear and maintaining our website. Plus, everyone around you gets to see you in a spiffy new shirt. You can also support us by spreading the word about our podcast. Do you know anyone who'd be interested in album details and stories? What about that person at work you've been meaning to strike up a conversation with? You can also review us where you listen to podcasts. All these things would be a tremendous help to us.
Maybe I'll Catch Fire was released on March 14th, 2000 on Asian Man Records, the label run by Mike Park out of his parents' garage. Asian Man had signed a number of ska bands in its early stages, but would go on to sign indie rock and post-punk bands like the Lawrence Arms. Alkaline Trio recorded the album the previous fall at Atlas Studios with Matt Allison and released it a mere 7 months after their I Lied My Face Off EP. Interestingly, none of those EP tracks turn up on Maybe I'll Catch Fire. According to producer-engineer Matt Allison, the album took a week to record.
Oh, wow.
Written and recorded very quickly. An account of the sessions was logged by Allison on the band's old website. According to Allison, recording began on Monday, October 18th. The band lugged their gear into Atlas Studio, at which time guitarist Matt Skiba popped open his guitar case and discovered a potato inside.
Always fun. Random potato.
Yeah. After a good laugh, the band explained that they had recently played a gig where they had been told to load in through the kitchen. And, you know, I guess they decided to swipe some potatoes. I don't know. Why not?
Save it for later.
Yeah. This might come in handy. They began the sessions by trying to find the proper guitar tones for the album. Matt had recently purchased a Les Paul in Philadelphia and was excited to use it. However, the guitar just wasn't providing the appropriate tone, so they opted for the LP Custom that Matt had used on previous recordings. Once that was decided on, a bummed out Matt joined Dan, Matt, and Glenn for dinner and then out for drinks. Apparently, they stayed out a little too late.
I mean, it's just crazy. I imagine like the work ethic from like inception of the band to like now, it just changes. I mean, you know what I mean? You're like this young band and yeah, why not?
Why not go out and get trashed the night before you're supposed to start recording?
Right.
Take the edge off, you know?
Exactly.
Recording continued the next day. Though a bit sleepy and most likely hungover, the band got to work, passing the time trying to come up with the dirtiest jokes possible. Basic tracking took up most of the first 2 days in the studio. Allison chose to have the band play live to tape in the studio, relying on the trio's skills as a live band. With a focus on getting the drums recorded, little mistakes by Matt or Dan were left and corrected later. If the feel wasn't right, or Glenn made a mistake, they went back to the beginning. It took the band about 4 days to track the instrumentation, taking a short day on the third day due to being up too late the previous nights.
Of course.
So imagining the band just kind of like laying these tracks down live and like having to start over. Any flub, any like missed cymbal. I mean, I've been in studios and it can get really monotonous.
Yeah, well, it's super, it's stressful too, right? I'm sure they were pretty used to it, but I think when you're like a younger band, at least at that point in their career, I mean, you're worried about, you know, time, studio time and like cost and things like that. So yeah, I can only imagine. I feel like stumbling through it, hungover.
Right. And there's this cross between like wanting it to feel live and organic, but also like trying to play it perfectly and being nervous and maybe being playing a little too tight, you know, because you're like hyper focused on, oh my God, if I like mess up or get to start all over again.
I can only imagine. I've only ever been in a studio like once or twice. I played in a band like many, many years ago. And yeah, I mean, I was terrified. So for me, I think personally being hungover probably would have been in my favor. But I think for a band like Alkaline Trio, definitely probably not like the best. But
yeah. On Friday, it was time to tackle the vocals. Bassist Dan went first, nailing "She Took Him to the Lake" in one take. Dan made short work of laying down his vocals, and Matt was ready to go by late afternoon. Matt used a tube mic that he had had to stand back from as to not overload it. The vocals took about 2 days, during which time the band worked on the track order. Once the vocals were done and the track sequenced, the band split so Allison could start mixing. The next day, the band was scheduled to hit the road, but popped in to check on the mixes. They decided "Keep 'Em Coming" needed to be remixed. From singer Matt Skiba's perspective, it was a hard record to do in a sense that he was not getting along with drummer Glenn Porter. According to Skiba, it was super rushed, and I think a lot of the production on the record is terrible. I just think it sounds really mushy. According to Skiba in Kerrang! Magazine, this was written very quickly because we had a feeling that our drummer Glenn probably wasn't going to be in the band much longer. It was a tough record to make, but also the fastest one we've ever made. We wrote and recorded the whole thing in just 2 weeks.
That's bananas, man. That's so funny. I was actually like reading up on it a little bit before we hopped on, and it's just that blows my mind. Like something that to fans is so iconic at this point, and they're like, we recorded this in 2 friggin' weeks.
Just dashed off, yeah.
Yeah, like we're good, and our drummer, we're not too sure about him at the point, you know, that right. point. Like, what? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing, yeah.
It is, yeah.
So the details of why Glenn left the band are fairly well documented, but I'm sure loaded with inaccuracies. Supposedly, he could be unkind to people. He had recently split up with Alkaline Trio friend and artist Heather Gable. There's the infamous box of shit story, which, I don't know. I don't know how much of that's true. Maybe all of it, maybe none of it. I bring it up because his imminent departure plays an important role in why this album was written and recorded so quickly. I mean, you can't mention the record without mentioning just how fast they went through this and how quickly and how maybe a record that, like you said, we hold so dear that's become so iconic was a record that the band doesn't really look back on very fondly.
Right. And I mean, you know, and of course, like radio is like every show I've ever been to.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll get into the tracks, obviously, but it's like, I mean, it's hilarious because if you watch earlier interviews, they're like, oh God, like, you know, it took them, at least Matt Skiba has said that it took him quite a while to make peace with the fact that like it's a fan favorite. And so, you know, they didn't play it for a while and now they're kind of back to playing it at shows, but it's that. I think it's funny.
Yeah. I mean, I won't lie. It bummed me out when I read that stuff because I'm like, I love Maybe I'll Catch Fire. That's my favorite Alkaline Trio record. And this guy doesn't like it. You know?
What
does that say about me?
You like their original drummer, maybe? I don't know.
It's all about Glenn Porter, yeah.
Right.
According to Mike Park on the In Defense of Ska podcast, great podcast if you've ever checked it out, the band wanted to name the album Shitty. Luckily, Mike or someone talked them out of it. I'm glad they did.
Yeah.
Elena, I want to know, how did you get into Maybe I'll Catch Fire?
I feel like I was late to the game, as I have been with some bands that I now hold very dear to, like, you know, my roster of bands that I listen to all the time. And I was actually living overseas, living in Greece, as one does in their 20s. Yeah. And my dad is from there originally. And so to give you some context, there is a huge naval station and like other military installations, which at the time that was very foreign to me also, being from Canada. And I met a guy that I hung out with for a bit while I was living there, and he's from California. And that was kind of one of the first conversations that we had when we started talking about music. He was like, hey, you listen to all this music, but have you heard this band called Alkaline Trio? Mm. And I legitimately was like, no, like, I think that one just kind of missed my radar. And so that was probably around 2001. 2002. So it was shortly after that had come out, right? And yeah. So I was like, give me like the, you know, the CDs that I should check out. And so he did. He gave me, a list of the records that I should check out, and Maybe I'll Catch Fire was top of the list. And
all right.
Not his top of the list, but it was at the top of the list that he gave me. So I think it's funny that this is this is like a very beloved record for you. And yeah. Just being a fan, I mean, I have listened to them since then, but I wouldn't say it's my favorite record, but there are tracks on there that every time I hear them just take me back, you know, to that place and that time. And so, yeah, I mean, so I'm kind of a bit of a cliche, admittedly, like radio and a lot of the old familiars that are on that record are probably my favorite as well. I would say radio. I mean, I love the Hot Water version of Radio. I mean, I love all the versions that I've ever heard of it. So cheesy to say that, but I will say that, honestly, that's probably my favorite track on the whole record.
Well, it's a great song. Absolutely.
Yeah.
What is your favorite Alkaline Trio record, if I may ask?
Oh, man.
It's hard to pick, but
I mean, the earlier stuff is so great, but I have a soft spot for Good Morning. Mm-hmm. I really, really love that record. I really love it. Just, it's a little, I mean, it's all dark, but it's particularly dark and beautiful, and just whoever produced it or the production on it is just really lovely.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, a friend had made me a mixtape in the fall of 98. And slipped the song Cop and the song Cringe on it from Alkaline Trio's first album, God Damn It. Then, of course, I got the Asian Man comps, Mail Order is Fun, and I found For Your Lungs Only on there. And, you know, I just like these songs. I was working college radio at the time in 2000, and Maybe I'll Catch Fire arrived at the station. I had established contact with Asian Man Records, and they would send me all the newest stuff. And, you know, I'd play the heck out of it and, you know, hoping others would too at the station, but realized it was probably just me. Anyway, I immediately seized this album and listened to it over and over again. I mean, there was just something about it. You know, it wasn't the galloping punk rock that I had been listening to almost nonstop since the mid-90s. Alkaline Trio songs had sort of like a meandering quality to them. Rather than this full force forward, the band employed like kind of like shuffling rhythms. The songs are a little slower.
Yeah,
you know, pounding tempos. There were jarring elements like the beginning of Sleepyhead and, you know, all these diverse songs on here. And the songs were like way longer than I was used to. I remember I used to tell people, like, they're the band with the long songs. It's punk rock with long songs.
Well, it's like they were kind of born too out of you know, like at that time you mentioned, I mean, just like Asian Man Records, Fueled by Ramen, like all of those labels at that time, right? It was like a lot of like that chugging kind of fast punk rock. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like upbeat, you know, so on and so on. And they kind of blew my mind in the sense that it was like not a total departure, mm-hmm. but it was like, and I'm such a goth kid at heart too. So it was like this marriage of like darker lyrics with this punk rock sound. And I mean, yeah, love it. I love it. So
Yeah, Matt would sing with that like pained voice. I mean, you can almost imagine him at his wit's end while singing lines like, all you've been asking for has been placed in front of you. You know, he's like really wailing it out in Sleepyhead. Yeah. I just love this album. It's so funny to me that the band Don't Hold It in High Regard, you know, feeling it was rushed and made under duress or whatever. But to me, this is the band's best album by far. I just love it. I mean, I know the reason why I ask you what your favorite one is because every Alkaline Trio fan I've ever met all have like a really strong feeling about their favorite record, like whether it's From Here to Infirmary or Good Morning or Maybe I'll Catch Fire or God Damn It. People who love this band are like committed to their favorite records, which I think is so fascinating. No one's like kind of like, well, you know, I kind of like this one, you know.
It's no, you're so right. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, From Here to the Infirmary, I love it. I have it on vinyl. They've autographed it for me. I'm like, I was that fan, nice. You know, early on, which I'll share a story with you later on if we have time. But yeah, I mean, they're such an amazing band. But that record in particular, I mean, what's so interesting about talking to you today is just, you know, really learning more about it and kind of like how it really did come about, knowing what I know now about the band. I mean, their early days were they're a little bit more of a blur for me than kind of like current day.
Yeah.
So super, super fascinating, but it's wild because there are some pretty incredible tracks on that record. So.
Well, the other thing that's interesting about Alkaline Trio is they've really kind of come into their image. I mean, nowadays you see them and they wear like, you know, the black shirts and the black ties or like, you know, there's like an aesthetic to Alkaline Trio. Sometimes they wear the eyeshadow or like, you know, they have like the ghoulish thing happening. But if you actually look up old clips, like live clips of Alkaline Trio, they've got like backward baseball caps on and t-shirts. So it's really funny that, you know, they've kind of grown into what people picture now when you say Alkaline Trio. They think of, you know, this image, but
yeah,
in the early days, it was just like, you know, white t-shirts and baseball caps.
I mean, for real. I mean, that was the 90s. I mean, I don't know how old you are, but I mean, for me, that was like what I was doing at that time, right? It was work tour and, you know, punk shows. And you're not wrong. I mean, just seeing earlier footage. I mean, to see Matt Skiba looking like, you know, he's wearing, you know, Dickies and a white t-shirt and a hat. It's just a little... You know, it's of that time, but it's, yes, a bit of a departure from what we're used to seeing now, for sure.
Well, all right. Are you ready to dive into these tracks?
Let's do it.
All right. The album kicks off with Keep 'Em Coming. As I mentioned on a previous episode of this podcast, when my pal Jeff and I discussed From Here to Infirmary, I just love this band for their lyrics.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that is something that I was thinking about before we were going to talk today. What I do professionally is, you know, storytelling. And so I kind of had this crazy like self-realization this year with just kind of getting to a point and thinking to myself, like, what is it that like I'm so passionate about? Like it's music, it's art, it's all these things. But at the end of the day, what it is for me is storytelling. And every band that I love are incredible lyricists, and Alkaline Trio is no exception. I mean, Dan and Matt they're super skilled and talented at writing incredible lyrics to this fast punk rock type, you know, sound. It's great. I mean, it's not common in a lot of punk bands, you know, to have really good lyrics.
True.
And then, you know, I'm not gonna toot my own horn, but I think like a lot of bands that I listen to that are in that punk scene, you know, whether it be like Against Me or, you know, Hot Water Music, Chuck Reagan, I mean, they're all amazing songwriters too. So Alkaline Trio definitely does a great job with that.
Right. And this song just paints such a vivid picture of a guy who's just miserable and going through the motions, you know, smoking, drinking, and plodding along. From the point of view of a performer, Matt sings, 14 hours unfed, I spent the last cents in my head, they're worth much less than pennies now, food for one thought shared with a crowd. So, you know, he's touring and sharing his emotions with a crowd every night, and because he does it night after night, it feels like it begins to cheapen his own thoughts. So here he is sitting at this airport bar drinking Bloody Marys, which he references in the song, and just like complaining about that and about flying. And it's, I love the lyrics. I'm going to go on and on about lyrics on this podcast today.
Please do. That's my favorite part of it, you know, and it's what's so funny to me is that as you're even referencing the lyrics, it's like, I can hear the song. So, yeah. And so to hear the story attached to that is, yeah, it's crazy. It's so crazy to me to think, because I mean, again, you know, all of those bands at that time, I mean, any band at any point in their career, but like early on, you're so hungry for that success. And I imagine that's what it was for them. And, you know, to finally have gotten that, and maybe, you know, there's a bit of turbulence, your band is uncertain at the time, and you're kicking out these killer songs, but you're just miserable, you know, sitting at some fucking airport, you know, drowning your sorrows. So that's crazy.
It is crazy. As a guitarist, this song fascinates me because Matt is barely moving away from like the fifth and seventh frets on the guitar, just cruising along in that groove for a little over 4 minutes. And yet the song's not boring to me at all. I mean, maybe some people think it is, but I just love how it just cruises right there. And I also love the hi-hat and the bass just kind of hang together in the verses. They're like doing the same rhythm. It's really cool musically.
Yeah, musically, lyrically, they just out of the gate. I mean, it's, you know, they've been so consistent with their sound. So even hearing like earlier, you can just hear like what they were kind of embarking on, and it's still in that sound now. So, but true. I mean, it's funny when you think of it in terms of repetition and sort of the way that the songs are laid out, like you wouldn't really think like, oh, super interesting, but it works, man. Like it just works.
It works for me, definitely.
Yeah, it works for me too.
I bet there's critics out there that feel like the songs are too long or they're too repetitive, but I don't know. That's what I really liked about this record is, you know, you put it on and the songs just kind of go on for a while and you get to enjoy them and they kind of unfold and you listen to them and, you know, they're not over in 2 minutes.
It was just so, it really is so different from bands that were kind of emerging at that time, even though they were part of that scene. Yeah. It was just very different, I think. So.
Yeah, they were very unique. All right, let's move on to the second track on the album, Madam Me. The sunrise fills your eyes. Cannot hear your cries. Bleeding, bleed, just go away. I can't take another day of it. Lower than piss, have you ever felt like this? Great line. Maybe not a soft or graceful one, but one that immediately creates an image of someone who's like hit rock bottom, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's like another thing I love about the lyrics. I mean, any song, I mean, they're very clever. It's like this punch to the face almost of just this like odd lyric.
Absolutely.
And it's like, you know, you immediately pay attention. So, yeah.
Definitely gives you, it causes you to like... look like what did he say?
Yeah.
You know, and I can't really tell what this song is about other than looking at someone who perhaps has made poor decisions, being knee deep in shit, as he says in the song. But okay. You know, I don't know, I love to listen to it. I've always wondered about the line, I will keep you warm in hell. You know, like, yeah. Is that like, I will do this pointless and necessary thing for you? Like, I always like tried to think through that line, like, what does that mean?
It's so strange. And I think what's funny, like, you know, talking to friends about just bands and stuff, I think women that listen to punk music and my male friends that listen to punk, it's our interpretations of the lyrics are probably vastly different, because when I hear those lyrics, I'm like, oh, like, probably got his heart broken, you know, he's talking about some, like, you know, relationship that probably isn't great or whatever. I get a lot of that sort of sentiment out of a lot of the lyrics that I hear, you know, on this record. Yeah, maybe, who knows? That'd be a great question for him though. I'd love to ask.
Yeah. Hey, Matt, why do you feel it's necessary to keep that person warm in hell?
Right.
Maybe you just, you know, I'll do the unnecessary things or I don't know. Anyway.
A lot of heartbreak, yeah.
Showing off his range a bit, I love how Matt goes from singing very low in the verses, you know, to pushing it way up for the choruses. I just think that's really neat. And I like how the vocal and guitar kind of alternates. Like, he'll deliver a line, then there's some guitar chords, and then he'll deliver another line. It's really good stuff. Let's move on to You've Got So Far to Go. Dan takes the lead vocal on a song about falling hard for someone in the early stages of a relationship.
Yeah, you know, and his, it's, you know, I will say this, the one takeaway that I remember when I first heard the band, I didn't know what they looked like. This is such a random thing to say, but I did not know what Matt Skiba or Dan Adriano looked like at all. When I saw them live for the first time, I was like, what the fuck? Like, I thought that Dan's voice matched Matt's face and that, yeah. And so it swapped. And so it's very interesting now. And now, of course, I can't imagine it being any different. You know, their voices are so, you know, just iconic in my mind. And yeah, I don't know. Dan is a very, I love his voice. Very different from Matt. Like, Matt is a very different type of vocalist. And so I feel like Dan really is just such an amazing, he's a storyteller. Like, when he sings, like, you just, I don't know about you. I mean, I feel, you know, I feel Matt's sort of energy in a different way. When Dan's delivering vocals, it's just, I mean, it cuts to my soul. I'm just like, ugh, like the
heart. He carries the emotion very well.
He does. He's just really gifted in that way, for sure.
And I love how they both have very different sounding voices. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're as different as can be.
they are. You know, I when I was playing that band, our drummer was, he's considerably older than I was at that time, probably by about, I'd say 10, 12 years. Mm-hmm. So he came up, you know, listening to The Clash and a lot of those, like, you know, late 70s, early 80s type of, you know, punk bands. the education that I received was wonderful. And he was like, you know, he goes, if you start to think about it, there are so many bands that work in that way. Like, there's always a vocalist that has that smooth, silky kind of lovely voice, like sort of like a smoother voice. And then it's a little bit gruffer and just more, you know, gravelly. And that's what they have going on. And it just, every, you know, every band I listen to, pretty much, it's, that's sort of the vibe. It's like, it's just the playoff of those types of voices together. And it just, it gives me all the feels.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, with The Clash, you had Joe's gruff, you know, rah, rah, rah voice. And then you had Mick's kind of softer voice.
I mean, it works, right?
It always drives me nuts when the two vocalists like sound the same. Then I'm like, wait a minute, who's singing here?
Right.
In this song, Dan is speaking of the nervousness and excitement, saying, let's walk home, let's be afraid. I want to grab you by the arms and kiss you so hard. Let's do it right under the streetlight. He realizes he better slow down. She might not be there yet, you know? In the early stages of a relationship, it's hard not to get overexcited and rush things a little bit. And that's what I feel like the song is about. He's like, all right, whoa, 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 slow down. This is exciting, but slow down.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great song in that sense. I mean, you feel that passion, and again, the lyrics really just kind of hit it home, you know. It's I'm such a fan of that type of delivery, where it really, you know, it paints that picture for you of what maybe was going through his head at that moment, you know. So that's the beauty of music, right? We get to sort of live that with them and, you know, feel it. So yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. A great line in the song is, I heard everybody's voice cut out when you spoke, and I watched all the lights go dim when your eyes opened. And that's a damn good line.
It is. Yeah, if you've ever been in love.
Yeah. It's like being so hyper-focused on someone that nothing else around you even registers. Mm-hmm. It's like that line from Big Fish, you know, that book by Daniel Wallace. Mm-hmm. They say when you meet the love of your life, time stops. And that's true. What they don't tell you is that when it starts again, it moves extra fast to catch up. And I just like those two, like that song and that line from that book always kind of connected to me.
That's lovely. I love that. I love that movie. Mm-hmm. Don't think I've read the book. But yeah, that sentiment is, it's so true. I mean, it's like almost catching, you know, lightning in a bottle when you meet your person, you know, and if you're lucky enough to meet that person, that's the thing, right? Then you feel like time's kind of slipping away so quickly because you finally found one another. So That's an interesting take on it. I like that a lot.
I love the bass tone on this and the way Dan's voice kind of settles into that bass and drum groove at the beginning. By the pre-chorus, the guitar comes in and the song bumps the intensity up a bit. The song alternates between this like hazy, kind of calm delivery to this like louder part. And I always love that exchange, you know, between the two parts.
Yeah.
Boxcar Racer, the one album side project of Tom DeLonge from Blink-182, totally ripped this song off with their song Cat Like Thief, I guess, which features Tim Armstrong, but even he couldn't save that thing. I mean, it's just such a ripoff, and it's like, come on, you guys.
Not a fan, I take it.
No, not a fan.
That's so funny. Yeah. I'll plead the fifth on that one.
No, it's okay. We welcome difference of opinion on this podcast.
No, for sure. I mean, I wasn't really a Boxcar fan. I mean, I was a huge Blink-182 fan early on in their career. And then, you know, I love Angels and Airwaves, and, you know, I like the stuff that Tom's done since, but that particular kind of inception of his music was not my fave.
All right, let's move on to Fuck You, Aurora. Great song title. Fuck you, Aurora, you took my only friend. Although it's all my fault, blaming myself, I could come to an end, so I say. I'm like, why are you so mad? Apparently, I dug into this one a little bit. It's a great song where Matt is dealing with the loss of a friend or maybe a lover by blaming the city of Aurora, Illinois, where that person has gone, leaving him behind. He doesn't blame the person and maybe shifts blame from himself when he sings, "And although it's all my fault, the blaming myself had to come to an end. The place that has sucked his friend far and away from him is Aurora," and he's pretty pissed. He's made efforts to connect with that person. Letters meant to be sent have been torn. The phone lies off the hook on the floor. But he knows it's all useless. That person is gone.
Oh, man. The heartache, it just continues with poor Matt. You know, it's so funny. I actually, earlier I was saying, you know, how I discovered the band. And I was able to catch them live in 2002 on a tour that they were doing with My Chemical Romance. And I was visiting back home in Toronto, hadn't been to a show in forever and ever. And so I caught two shows while I was home. One was The Bouncing Souls, the other was Alkaline Trio and My Chemical Romance. And nice. I had friends that were opening. I was like, you need to get me backstage. Like, I need to meet this band. They're so fucking cool. And like, their music's really great. And so I had this weird interaction with the band. And, you know, Derek was obviously in the band at that time. Yeah. He was hands down. I mean, the memory of that, like, he was just very charming and lovely and very, very lovely. You know, Dan was just quiet as he's been the other times that I've met the band. And, but Matt, I mean, he's like a giant, right? He's like over 6 feet. He's I'm huge. About 5'4", you know, and like every girl at that time too, I was like, ooh, Matt Skiba, you know, he's this like, you know, he's very whatever, you know, attractive, so on and so on. And I was so nervous and I was like such a dork about it. I'm standing there with like, you know, a record, asking them to sign the record. And it was like this weird, awkward, extended handshake with Matt Skiba. and I still to this day, I talk about it because it was so unusual to me. It wasn't, and there were people behind me that were like waiting, but it was this weird, long, extended, like overly long handshake and eye contact. And I was like so nervous. I couldn't even like talk. I'm like, what is going on here?
That's funny.
Very strange. So me wanting to tell him, you know, I think you're a great lyricist and all of these things just completely went out the window.
Right out your brain, yeah.
Yeah, right out my brain. But
I mean, wouldn't you mess with people if you were like in his position, you know?
I guess so. But it was just such an unusual, you know, thing. But
that's funny.
He's got a definite presence about him. So I can only imagine that he's a pretty intense like songwriter too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this song is intense. I mean, I like in the third verse how it repeats the first, but with like way more intense, you know, like wordage and it's like, it's almost like this heavy wind that was the first verse comes in like a huge tornado by this third. Yeah. And he's just really letting it loose.
You know, where you're at in life now is so vastly different from then. And I can only imagine, like, you know, you've not that you feel heartache any differently or anger or relationship stuff any differently now, but, you know, I think you just deal with it differently. And so, you know, a song like Fuck You, Aurora, I mean, he obviously was pretty upset, you know, about whatever was going on. So, yeah, and the delivery of it too, I think, you know, just making sure that we know, you know, he's not happy.
Yeah, well, I think songs definitely hit you differently at different points in your life. Absolutely.
Yeah, they for sure do.
He mentions he'll never get behind the wheel of a Chrysler. There's a Chrysler plant about an hour from Aurora. I'm not sure what that line really means. Some people have said that this song is about a friend who got killed in a car accident, and it happened in Aurora with someone driving a Chrysler. I don't know. Sounds feasible, but again, internet rumorage. The only person who really knows is Matt Skiba.
Right.
Let's move on to Sleepyhead. Starts off with these jarring power chords where Matt allows for space between them, letting the other strings like ring out. I love that Matt uses this intense rhythm to his singing to start the song. It's like totally frantic, and you really get a sense of the story through that delivery, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When he's like, you're scratching and itching, and he's like yelling it, brought by the spiders beneath your skin. Like whenever I hear that, I'm like, ooh, you know,
the heebies. Yeah. Yeah. It's just crazy. The
you
lyrics.
Are, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I'll pass on that, but thank you. But it's great in the sense of, yeah, I mean, it makes you feel, you know, along with the music, it's just, yeah, they do, man. There's stuff like just talking to you. I'm like, yeah, like it really just gives me the feels. Like it's great. It's really great. Yeah.
I wonder if it was easy for them to just do that. If like they were just in the zone of being able to figure out those kinds of patterns or those kinds of vibes that the listener would feel, or if they really had to work at it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think like just seeing them interviewed. I mean, it seems pretty inherent. Like I know that they pull a lot from literature and, you know, films and things like that. And so that's an interesting thing to think about too. I mean, how much of it really is factual or like related to like real things in their lives. You know, I've heard other artists, you know, there are, you know, Brian Fallon is a good example. I mean, I listen to so many of his song lyrics and it's like, it puts me in this like space of like, oh my God, like he was feeling this and this and this only to find out that it was just complete nonsense.
Like third character. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, what? No, like, no, you know, it's
not. I thought this was
so maybe, I mean, maybe in that case, you know, maybe some of their lyrics sort of take from other, you know, other things outside of their personal lives.
Sure.
As well.
Yeah, definitely.
So, but, yeah, it's interesting to think about.
I like how the song builds tension at the end with the repeat of the lines, nothing to see here but the rain. There's nothing to hold you but the flames, and it builds up until Matt is like just yelling those lines. I always love the end of this song.
Yeah, I think from the time that I was a teenager to now, I mean, those types of vocals, I mean, are just, it's great. I mean, it's great. It's so visceral, right? Like just to hear it. I mean, if you're doing that in your own car, singing those lyrics at the top of your lungs, I mean, I can't hit half those notes, but.
No, neither can I. It doesn't stop me though from trying.
Exactly. Yeah, no, me either. I mean, I think it's, you know, he's feeling things, but I think it's with intention too. I mean, it's, you know, it's just, that's how they do it. But.
Mm-hmm. The next song is the title track, Maybe I'll Catch Fire.
And maybe I'll catch fire. Something warm to hold me. Something pure to burn away the darkness that hides inside.
Maybe I'll catch fire. Something warm to hold me. Something pure to burn away the darkness that hides inside my mind. Dan with the intense lyrics.
Yeah.
He has a way of really capturing depression and like desperation. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he really is impressive. I mean, his songwriting abilities are just so, I mean, have you listened to his solo stuff as well?
Yeah.
Yep. With The Emergency? It's just so inherent to him and how he delivers and sings and add those types of lyrics to it. And I'm just done for. Like, oh God, like what? Like it's just so painfully beautiful all at the same time. I mean, there's such a beauty in how he delivers those types of lyrics, you know?
And just honesty and, you know, getting it out in a way that doesn't feel forced or like awkward.
Yeah. Yeah. Like very vulnerable. And I think too, like that's an interesting thing to touch on as far as, you know, that time when that record came out and other bands, I think they were doing those. I mean, bands, that great bands always are like vulnerable and kind of put themselves on, you know, out there on the stage. But there are certain artists and certain bands that I can reference, you know, in my time listening to music where I'm just like, holy shit. Like I mean, it's just a very genuine, like they're speaking from their soul, like entirely. And I feel like he's one of those artists. Like he definitely, it's all out there, you know?
Yes. Yeah. It takes bravery to really kind of bare your soul like that.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know if I could do it.
Well, I mean, it's true, right? Like, I mean, I think, you know, in the last couple of years, I mean, obviously COVID's been a thing, but like, you know, thinking about a lot, I've been to, like yourself, I've been to like 1,000 shows, you know, and what's so disappointing to me, what I've experienced over time is that, you know, you see a band a million times and unfortunately there are some bands where it's almost like, you know, it's time to pack it in, right? Mm. Like they're just sort of phoning it in, you know, and I've never witnessed that with Alkaline Trio. Mm-hmm. They always feel present, the delivery, and no matter what record, you know, the songs are off of, you know, and again, I mean, they've sung them a million times, but to deliver them in an original way, you know, for a different crowd at a different time in their career, it's super impressive. And it's such a testament to
keep that going,
their talent. Yeah, for sure.
Dan talks of the excitement of hanging out a third floor window, looking at the rocks below. He sings, "If I fall out, and maybe I'll fall hard, something tough to break me, something sharp to rip into my insides and bleed out all that pain." Yeah. Again, just some intense lyrics. I mean, great stuff. I would say that this is one of my favorite songs on the album for the incredible imagery, the directness. He makes it all like really catchy. Like you're singing along to this song about his insides, you know, being smashed on the rocks. And you're like, nah, right. Nah, nah, nah. You know, it's like, wait a minute. What am I singing?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I remember like introducing the band to a friend, like, you know, after I discovered them and, you know, so on. And he had very different taste in music. And he's like, "What? Like, why do you like them so much?" And I'm like, dude. Like literally and audibly, I'm like, dude, oh my God. Like their lyrics are so dark. I said, just listen to them. I said, because when you give it a surface listen, like you're saying, I mean, you're like, holy shit, this is catchy and awesome.
Yeah.
But you know, then you start really paying attention to what they're saying. You're like, what the hell? Like, oh my God, you know, like.
And the catchiness doesn't cheapen it at all. Like,
no.
You know, no. You still feel like, whoa, you know, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Dan only had a few songs on this album, but damn, they were good ones. They're good ones. Tuck Me In is the next song.
Tuck me in with the tarantulas. I want to let them in my mouth and down my throat to lay the earaches. Tuck me in to where there's bleeding, where it's spilled out of the walls up to the floor.
A lot of great lines in this one. I especially like, "I pour out onto the floor like liquid, white from fallen glass, nothing to cry over. My skin went sour long ago." It knew it had nowhere else to go. Yeah, and I just love the way Matt sort of utilizes his bitterness in these songs. You know, it's like graphic. He's trying to dig into meaning. Yeah, it can be interesting because so many different people could interpret these lyrics differently. Like you and I were talking earlier about just different interpretations.
Yeah, I mean, you could say, you know, whatever, however they could have written it, you know, to not like be so poetic with it. It could have been so literal, you know, and mm-hmm. I think that's such a talent that they have of pulling from, you know, imagery that is pretty standard, but phrasing it and creating those lyrics and singing them in a way that is like, yeah, it makes it seem a little bit more poetic, I guess, in you know, how they're delivering. So
yeah. And I had a friend once say to me, he's just listing things to tuck him into bed with. And I'm like, well, all right. But, you know, it's simple, but I don't think it is meant to be overanalyzed. I think what he's trying to do here is he's trying to create this imagery, you know, this unhappy, uncomfortable mood. And yeah. I think he's successful in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they are. And again, I mean, you think about records that were out at that time, you know, and it's like, we've talked about Blink-182 today. And so it's, you know, I'm thinking of like those lyrics versus, you know, this record. And yeah. I'm like, you know, the content's a little bit
going
different.
On a date. We're going to stay up real late.
Right. Like, my girlfriend broke my car. She got me tacos, whatever, yeah. You know, it's like, as opposed to this like beautiful, like beautifully written lyric.
Of, you know, it's a niche. It's got its place, you know, over here.
It does. And I'm a fan. I'm a fan. I mean, I can't, it's definitely not on rotation these days, but definitely a fan. But that's sort of what's given them staying power too, is that mm-hmm. they never catered, and not to say that bands like Blink 182 were catering to, you know, an audience. That was just, that's who they were. But, right. you know, bands like Alkaline Trio, I mean, you listen to this record and look at the lyrics, and then you look at the last record that they put out, This Is Cursed. It's like, you listen to those same lyrics and it's like, holy shit. Like, they're still catchy. They're still all of these things, but they're still beautifully written, mm-hmm. you know? And as a, you know, hearing them in my 20s and then hearing them now, it's so funny to me that there's no difference. Like, I can listen to those records of that time and then listen to the stuff they just released this past year and be just as excited and into it. So I think that's a real testament to their talent and their band.
Throughout the song, he repeats the tuck me in line and names various situations and slides in, all the fallen angels in hell will take me away from you, which is, again, just a great line. It's definitely one of the fastest songs on the album. The lyrics are really dark and the pace is so quick that it really creates this feeling of uneasiness, which I believe is what Matt was going for. I absolutely had to go find live versions of the song on YouTube to see how it sounded live, especially at the end when Matt delivers that last chorus up an octave. He's like way up here and it's so awesome. I mean, he's really pushing it. And then the song ends with him just screaming the word go and like holding it.
Yeah.
It's so good. Oh, I had to see it.
I don't think I've ever, I mean, I'm sure I have seen a version of it online on like, you know, YouTube or something like that, but I'll definitely go and revisit.
Check it out. Yeah.
After the podcast. Yeah.
He sounds like he's losing his voice too. Like, I think Matt kind of has that thing where he kind of sounds like he's losing his voice a lot. Mm-hmm. And he gets that one. He just, you could tell it's like painful. He's just like, yeah.
Well, whenever I've seen video of them, like, Matt is singing those types of like vocals. I mean, just every vein in his neck,
yeah.
His face is beet red. I mean, his face
is contorted. Yeah.
Yeah. He's singing.
I mean, meanwhile, Dan's over there just like, you know, you know, he like makes it look so easy.
You're right. Like he does. He looks so effortless. Like whenever he performs, it's so crazy. But yeah, Matt definitely is just a different artist, you know, in that sense, but I'll check it out for sure.
Moving on to She Took Him to the Lake. This is another song by Dan, and this one to me feels the most like a straight narrative. It's like a story. You were talking about storytelling. The song tells the story of a boy who falls in love with a girl, you know, down by the lake one summer. And she told him he was the one, but then goes away. You know, it's like Greece, you know, they go their separate ways.
Right.
The calls don't get returned. You know, he goes to see her, but now she's looking at him differently. Like, it's not there anymore. Right? That magic, that summer love is gone.
Ah, heartbreak. Yeah. It seems to be a theme. Yeah, it's a tale as old as time, right? Boy meets girl, boy gets girl, boy loses girl. Yeah. Hopefully boy gets girl back. We don't know, but yeah, but that seems to be kind of, yeah, very, very much more straightforward than, you know, a little bit of the other, you know, lyrics in the songs previous, but.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe look at, you know, moments. Now, sometimes those moments don't last. You know, he thought it felt right, only to realize that the girl had moved on. You know, it was just a moment. Yeah. And people's entry points into those moments. He thought it was something. You know, he thought it was going to last. He thought it was forever. And she was just like, yeah, you know, summer fling. Or like, you know.
Not on the same page. I know, yeah, I love chatting with you because it's very, it's interesting. I'm always curious about, again, talking to, you know, my female friends and their kind of take on the bands that we all collectively love, mm-hmm. you know, and the lyrics and sort of, I mean, and it is different for everybody, but just as far as like maybe, you know, the way that you associate based on who you're dating really, or, you know, whatever you identify as or whatever that looks like. It's so interesting, but you know, at the end of the day, love is love, right? So right. It's interesting to hear your take on it being like, yeah, man, like I've been there kind of, you know, you meet somebody and we've all been there.
Yeah.
Of like, well, I thought this was a thing, but apparently not really, you know? Mm. Yeah. And then you're at home writing lyrics about it.
Well, you know, I don't profess to know what any of these songs are really about. I just, these are right. My interpretations. And, you know, part of what I love doing, why I love doing this podcast is I love to hear people's interpretations. And sometimes, you know, we get close, and then sometimes I'll have people on and we're like, what, that's what you think it's about? I think it's about this, you know? Right. That's always fun.
Right. I think, you know, their lyrics are pretty, like, even though they're sort of wrapped in a beautiful package, a lot of the times I think that they're pretty straightforward as far as whatever it is that they're singing about, as far as like the reference of what it's really about, maybe, you know, that's up for debate, but they do a great job of, you know, just, yeah, telling stories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This song and the next song, 5-3-10-4, kind of sail by for me. So let's move into 5-3-10-4. According to Matt Skiba, in an interview I read, I used to be a bike messenger in Chicago for a number of years, and one of my best friends who I worked with, his name's Virgil, but over the radios, when you talk to each other, you don't call each other by name. You have like a call number. His call number was 53, and you know, on the radio, I'd call him 5-3. And we'd meet up on rainy days or whatever, long busy days, we'd call each other on the radio and meet up and smoke pot and hang out. He was kind of my leaning post on rough days. A lot of times he would tell me where he was and I would answer with 5-3-10-4 and go meet him and hang out. So it's kind of a random but interesting, you know, explanation for why this song is called, you know, this list of numbers. I don't think the song's about bike messaging. I don't think, but.
Well, that's interesting because I've always wondered about that particular, I mean, and especially looking at it today, I'm like,
yeah,
what is that about? Like, that's so strange. But
locker combo or something.
Something, yeah. I mean, it's so funny. But I mean, that little, you know, that story that you just told about it. I mean, you know, I grew up in a city with a lot of bike careers, so I could see that. I mm-hmm. mean, sure, okay, Matt. It's a nice nod to his career friend.
Yeah, I don't really know what this song's about. I mean, we were just talking about interpretation. Here's mine. I think this could be way off. You'll have to let me know what you think, okay. But. I feel like in this song he's comparing like being at school, like going to school every day, to the slaughtering of cattle. Now hear me out.
Yeah.
Again, this might be way off, but I picture this scene where, like, you know, where kids are being herded around at school, you know, tormented by bullies, and teachers told where to go, what to do. Matt adds the sense of being cold to create an atmosphere of discomfort. And then in the song he mentions cattle twice. Huh. And towards the end of the song he sings, "The sound of cattle screaming, still screaming in my ears. They came in metal coffins, chained me up and hacked me off my ears." And I just, I don't know, I get the sense that he's comparing the two, you yeah. know, like being at school and being like, you know, prodded forward through the day as being akin to like slaughtering cattle.
Well, I mean, it's funny. I mean, yeah, I mean, I can see the reference, right? You know, as far as like being a herd and, you know, the education system and all of those things that go along with it. Not that it's bad, but I mean, it is, it's very conformist and all of those things, which are very unlike somebody who's into, you know, punk music and, you know, pursuing a career in music. I mean, it's not exactly, you know, all that cookie cutter. So yeah, maybe. I mean, I like your interpretation. Let's go with it. Cause I too, I have no idea what it's about. So
it could be about foreign policy. I mean,
right. We don't know. Well, it's funny, as you were talking, I'm like, well, he is vegan, right? Yeah. I'm like, maybe it's a literal, I doubt it's that literal, but
now he is. I don't know if he was then.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how long he's been vegan for, but he's very open about that. So who knows? But I think your take on it is probably a little bit more relevant than my interpretation.
Please note, it is my take.
Right.
People playing along at home.
Right. Now I'm going to make it my life's purpose to like reach out to Matt Skiba and Dan and be like, you know, like we need to sort of have a sit down and figure out like, what exactly were you talking about?
All right. Well, here it is. The final track on the album, Radio.
Shaking like a dog shitting razor blades. Waking up next to nothing.
The final song, and what a closer. I mean, this is the song, let's be honest. This is the song everybody knows. People who know Maybe I'll Catch Fire, they know this song.
Yeah.
And people even who don't know this album know this song.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hard pressed. Well, it's you know, it's interesting. Again, I've taken to making all these like crazy Spotify playlists, and at work, my my boss, I love her to bits, but she constantly vetoes my my punk rock choices as we're listening, because we work in an open concept, you know, office. And Radio came on. My coworker's girlfriend is a huge Alkaline Trio fan, and we were talking about them one day. And so he is not a huge fan, so I put on, you know, just a few songs, and Radio is one that was kind of played through. And he's like, he just sort of paused. He's like, what? Well, that's an odd lyric, you know, like a dog shitting razor blades. Yeah. And I'm like, I go, but you know, like there's just something about it. He's like, that's fair, you know, like it's just again, it's one of those lyrics that is so just, you know, the visual that it gives you is just I mean, it hits home.
It wakes
quickly.
You up. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and then of course your radio and, you know, bathing and all of those things. So yeah, it's funny. It's like I said, I mean, it's one of my favorites. But I think more overall like faves, you know, that they've put out. But it is. It's a great way to close the record. I mean, it became this iconic song for them, you know, that they both love and hate. So I think what's funny, I think, is that, you know, I think if you talk to a lot of bands, which I'm sure you have in your time, that, you know, the fan favorite is probably the least favorite of the band, usually, because it's just been, you know, played and played, and they've sung it a million times. And so I think it's an interesting dynamic that, you know, some of our favorites are often not theirs, but you know, I think as they get older, I mean, I think you appreciate it, right?
Like, they come around to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. That's what gave you your start, you know? So kind of make peace with it almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just remember hearing this song for the first time and just being blown away by it. I mean, starting with that simple guitar line and Matt's pained lyrical delivery. I mean, it just hits you in the stomach. According to Matt, this song was written in the studio during recording of the album. They felt the album needed a little bit more variance, and so Matt took a guitar out onto the back porch at Atlas Studios and put the whole song together in like one shot. Just banged it out.
Wow. Okay.
In an old punknews.org interview, Matt explained, "The story also goes that you hope somebody's listening to your radio and it's plugged in next to the bathtub so that it electrocutes them. It never goes as far as to say that I hope it happens. It's just there, next to the water, next to the water you're in. So not quite like wishing death upon somebody, but maybe thinking about it just a little bit."
You know, I think, again, I mean, it's so funny. Like I've always been a bit of a dark soul, I guess. And so I'm a huge fan of those types of lyrics, only for the dark humorous aspect of it. I mean, right. I would never wish anybody dead, but I think that when I hear those lyrics in that song, I mean, I do, I kind of giggle because it's just like, who hasn't felt that, you know? It's like kind of like a fuck you, you know, like you broke my heart, or, you know, you fucked me over, or whatever that thing is. And it's like, you know, you can't exactly come out and be like, I want to kill you, but all of that rage and those
getting trouble for that.
Yeah. It's, it's like, well, you know, and again, it's just delivered in this like lovely package of, you know, here you go.
You mentioned the line shaking like a dog shitting razor blades. In that same interview, he goes on to explain that that line actually came from one of his friend's father, who was a retired Vietnam War colonel. Matt said he was telling us some war stories when I was up visiting them years ago. He said that wherever the fuck they were getting shot at, and his buddy was shaking like a dog shitting razor blades. So I wrote that down and used it. So
that's fucking great. Like,
I go out just like, you know, drawing from your experiences. Like, that's a good line. I got to put that in something.
Like, just the foresight to even think that you would use that in something. Like, that's what I marvel at. I'm like, oh, okay. You know.
Great song. Definitely one of my favorites. I mean, I just love that he's barely masking his rage in this one. He's got a big fat fucking bone to pick, but he still calls her my darling, which
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think those, like, that it just speaks to my personality, because truly, I mean, it really is like a big old fuck you, but like the darling is in there. And you know, anybody who, you know, takes the time to be a little bit more, you know, eloquent in their delivery, I would think would find that very funny. You know, even when you're pissed, it's like it's a little bit more salty when you have the darling in there, you know.
Sting.
It's great.
All right, well, that takes us through the track. So now, just taking a really quick look at the artwork for the album, Heather Gable, who designed the band's Heart logo, took the front cover photo. According to Matt in Alternative Press magazine, that was actually a house that exploded in the dead of winter in Chicago. We just heard this huge explosion and all woke up. This house had exploded and we all went to see what was going on. And Heather was taking photos of the firemen going in and out of there. So I'll admit, when I first got this record, it took me the longest time to figure out what was going on this cover. You know, I didn't see it immediately. I just thought, oh, that's a nice skyline. Like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of my take on it also. I've never heard that story, like that about the artwork itself. So that is news to me. It's amazing, because I don't know if you've ever checked out Heather Gables, who's obviously married to Laura Jane Grace. You know, originally, they were married for a number of years. She's an incredible artist, and she's got her own band. I don't know if you've checked that out, but I've met her once and one time only when she was actually doing merch for Alkaline Trio. I went to go see them in Birmingham, Alabama. And nobody there, I don't think, realized who she was. I'm sure people did, but the friends that I was with didn't really make the connection. And she is like 6 feet tall. She's like this Amazon, like just gorgeous woman. And she's very intimidating. And so I recall just meeting her the one time and being really, you know, as I'm such a dork every day of my life. So I'm not very, you know, cool when it comes to interacting with people most of the time. But I knew who she was, and I was a little blown away because I was very familiar with, you know, her connection to the band and just her as an artist. And so that's really neat. I did not know that she took that cover for that record.
So I definitely went down a Heather Gable wormhole, just exploring artwork and music, and it was cool.
She's amazing. I mean, just that whole, you know, that whole time in music for Alkaline Trio, and then of course Against Me, and her, and, you know,
the close friendship with Matt and all that.
Just super cool. So
in closing, Maybe I'll Catch Fire has always been and always will be my favorite Alkaline Trio record. With long songs that open up room for great songwriting, this album is the one I feel the most. The pain in Matt and Dan's vocal delivery and the harshness of the lyrics always hit me. Making this album was a challenging time for the band, as Matt's one-time best friend, Glenn, was becoming someone the band found challenging to work with. I imagine it's hard to write a good record when you're not getting along with the people helping you write it. And yet somehow they pulled it off. And I might say, quite brilliantly. Maybe it's because they didn't overthink it. Maybe someone could have told them to shorten the songs. But they didn't, and I think it makes for a unique and interesting listen.
Yeah, I mean, one, thank you for having me on the show. And, you know, two, I think it's always awesome to go back and revisit records that you're so familiar with, but kind of they, you know, get archived in a weird way, right? Mm. Like that's kind of how it works for me anyway. But so going back and viewing it from the lens of like right now is just really cool. It's really cool. And hearing all the stories and, you know, how it came about. I mean, I'm kind of blown away that it really was written.
It gives you a new appreciation for the record, doesn't it?
It really does. And I am constantly, you know, amazed by all bands, you know, when I hear that they've written records in such a short span of time. It's like, how is that possible to possess that amount of talent? And it's, you know, really, it's just such their ability. It's just whatever that dynamic is between those members and that magic that they create. I mean, it is really so special. So thank you for that. And like, thank you for kind of running down and just chatting about it. I think it's been, I've learned a new, you know, a few new things, which is really cool. So it's been fun. Yeah.
Been fun on this side as well. Elena, thank you so much for hanging out with me today and talking about the Alkaline Trio and going through these songs. And I mean, I just think it's a blast to talk with people about music and, you know, get their stories and their interpretations. And this has been a lot of fun today.
Same. Thanks again.
I'd like to thank Kristen from the Mabel Syndrome for connecting me with you today. Make sure you check out the Mabel Syndrome podcast and website at mabelsyndrome.com. I'd like to thank my buddy Craig for all the things he does behind the scenes for the Talking Records podcast. I'd like to thank Krista Makes from Less Than Jake for the theme music. And thanks to all of you for tuning into Talking Records. Picking a great album and then finding someone to talk about it with was the whole reason I started this podcast. It's been so great to meet so many people through music, create new friendships, and a deeper appreciation for the music. We hope that you'll continue to support what we do. Don't forget to check out talkingrecordspodcast.com, and don't forget to tell others about what you enjoy about this show. Help us spread this thing around, and we'd greatly appreciate it. All right, Elena, thank you so much for hanging out today.
Thanks again.
Take care.
You too.